More details have emerged about the mystery donor who left £1.5 million to Sinn Féin. I've been speaking to the former SDLP councillor, Maria Cahill, and asked her about her getting a copy of the will.
Did, yeah. I just went and downloaded it from the probate office, Stephen, for their princely sum of £1.50.
And what did you see?
Well, it's quite interesting, actually. It's a fascinating read. He made the will in 1997 in Coote Hill. He actually, the total amount of his assets considered, which will go to the party, is £2.5 million, which is considerably more than what has been reported previously. He left a small amount of financial donations to people, I think four individuals. One was an investigative journalist, one was an MP, and two other people who are named, but who I presume people won't know. And then he left the rest of it to Sinn Féin. Interestingly, the executors of this will were Joe Cahill, my great-uncle, and Desi Mackin, who has been for many years, or has been at one point in time, the party treasurer. And I just think it's fascinating, Stephen. Like, it's something that you would read in a novel. You know, even the way in which it is written, there are a number of caveats in the will. For example, he states specifically that the money should be given to the party known as Provisional Sinn Féin in the Republic. But if that can't happen or there's a split at the time of his death, it should be given to the party which Gerry Adams belongs to. And it then goes on to say that if Gerry Adams is no longer a party member, it should be given to the party except for the SDLP in the North, which has the largest serving number of Republican or Nationalist councillors. So I just think every single thing was thought of. And really interesting at this time was...
Well, to be fair, that's what people do when they're making a will. They try to go into detail so that there cannot be... You know, this man was a car mechanic, I believe. So therefore, you know, he wouldn't have known the ins and outs of a will. So no doubt he was very well advised, a very, very successful car mechanic, a multi-millionaire car mechanic. So he's clearly taken good advice as to how to write this will.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like that the advice that he got was extremely good, you know. But I'm not casting any aspersions on what he has put in the will. What I'm saying is it just reads. I mean, I just think it's a brilliant read. I've seen other wills, you know, which are kind of very boring. You know, they go through the motions. This, to me, maybe given my own history, I thought was very interesting. But, I mean, I suppose, interestingly also, this guy who had £2.5 million in assets was living at the time at no fixed abode. You know, he had a caravan home in the south of Ireland, and he made the will in Ireland, and it was then transferred over with him, and he died in Wales in a nursing home. So, you know, I know that there has been previous commentary. Sinn Féin has said that this man came from a wealthy family and that's how he came by this money. You know, I really think that this would make a fantastic film, because you don't see every day of the week someone who has that amount of assets but generally doesn't live very ostentatiously or in a wealthy manner.
Well, maybe he accumulated his wealth after he moved out of his caravan.
Well, maybe he did, but it says in the will that he owns assets in Singapore, in New Zealand, in Ireland and in England. So you would imagine that if that is the case, that the assets that he had at that time, you know, that he made the will in 1997, meant that he knew that there would be something to leave.
It's also interesting. It's a great story, I guess, of how a multi-millionaire doesn't always have to follow convention. There might be some people wondering to themselves, my goodness, a multi-millionaire getting up every day and being a car mechanic. But that's,
yeah, you know, and maybe
that's again, you know, maybe that's a sign of how this gentleman didn't follow the conventions in life. Get up,
maybe,
you know,
and you know,
rather than live a lavish lifestyle, he fixed cars while having a couple of million in the bank.
And maybe it will become the norm. Maybe we will see quite a lot of individuals who don't live very wealthy lives gifting large amounts of money to political parties. You know, maybe that's the way it'll go.
But the Electoral Commission are not suggesting that there's anything wrong here. There's absolutely no evidence that there's anything wrong. And this is all above board. It's been declared. There it is, the will in black and white. And we're all entitled to leave our money to whoever we want. Maybe people will be shocked when they find out who I leave my money to.
You're going to leave it all, I suppose, Stephen, to whoever would be the most worthy cause of doing so. But, you know, anybody is entitled to leave whatever they have amassed throughout their life. No difficulty with that. I'm not sure that the Electoral Commission actually has the powers to investigate how someone came by their wealth. And that responsibility, I think, lies with the executors of the will. So obviously the executors of this will have done due diligence and that they are satisfied that, you know, this man came by his money in an above board manner. I think for public confidence and scrutiny, just because it is a huge amount of money that has gone to a political party, that it due diligence should be done, or Sinn Féin should be transparent maybe in how they came by that decision, how the executors of his will, who have been linked to the Sinn Féin party, came by their determination that this man actually got his money from being a wealthy family member. You know, I think that would be really, really helpful, particularly given their stance on political donations given to other parties such as the DUP. I think it really would pose this party to be extremely transparent about how this man not only came by his money, but came by the decision, you know, to then gift it to who he gifted it
to. Well, one of the executors in the will, Joe Cahill, was your uncle. Did he ever talk to you about it?
No, he was my great uncle. He had responsibility for finance, I suppose, for a number of different outfits, if I can put it like that. And I was very close to him during my life. And I would have imagined he'd had plenty of conversations over the years about quite a lot of eccentric people that he knew. And if someone had come to me in 1997 and said, look, I'm going to leave you a huge amount of money here in my will when I die, you know, I would have thought that person would have been spoken about fondly or with surprise, or, you know, hear what happened to me today, Maria. He never said a word, you know, so I find that in itself a bit strange. But, you know, Joe never spent a proverbial penny of anybody else's money, so maybe he just treated it with the confidence that it deserved.
And a lot about Sinn Féin in the current news cycle. John O'Dowd to challenge Michelle O'Neill's position as vice president of the party.
Yep, I think it's a welcome development that John O'Dowd has thrown his hat in the ring. I would have thought that the challenge would have come before now and my money would have been on Conor Murphy. And it still, I suppose, remains to be seen whether Conor Murphy or anyone else decides to also put their hat in the ring. I think that Alex Kane, though I've seen a few tweets from Alex over the weekend saying that maybe this is a challenge to the leadership of Sinn Féin rather than just a challenge to Michelle O'Neill. I think the only person that can answer that question is John O'Dowd, but it'll be a contest. It'll be stage managed within an inch of its life. There won't be so much as a handbag of Dawn on it.
Well, you don't know that.
Nice.
You
well,
don't know that,
Stephen. So, you know, this is the first contest that they have had for a leadership position since 1983.
Which is how I'm confident in saying to you, you can't say it's going to be stage managed in any way. There's no evidence that it will be. And maybe John O'Dowd seriously wants to take on Michelle O'Neill, and that's a healthy democracy.
Oh, no, when I say stage managed, I mean it in the sense that every political party stage manages a contest to try and stop any fallout that they would potentially have afterwards. So what I mean is that this will be a very nice contest, if you like. Everyone will get along, and they will have the discussions with their party members, and they will try to navigate the party through without any splits or fallout. That's what I mean by stage management.
I wonder, are there any policy differences between John O'Dowd and Michelle O'Neill?
Well, who knows? Interestingly, there were a few tweets to John O'Dowd over the weekend, one in particular from Jim McVeigh, who would have been the former group leader in Belfast City Council, and he is already expressing displeasure with the party's current position on corporation tax and urging John O'Dowd to take a view on that. I've seen other tweets urging him to reverse the party's stance on abortion, for example. So I think that it will healthily open up a debate that probably has been stifled, you know, for the last number of decades, and because there hasn't been a party challenge. So it can only be a good thing for the party. How they get through it at the other end is another matter, and I would expect then that a challenge would come, not this year, but I think most definitely next year then, to the party president's position.
Okay, Maria Cahill, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, let's discuss this all further with Alison Morris from the Irish News. Morning, Alison.
Morning.
Good morning. And the newsletter political editor, Sam McBride. Morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
I'm just looking at this, Will. We're going to post this on my Twitter feed, at Stephen Nolan, the full copy of the will. This figure of $1.5 million, Sam, being bandied about, actually, when you see the will, it says at the bottom of it, it's hereby certified that it appears from information supplied in the application for this grant that the gross value of the said estate amounts to $2,599,000. So it's £2.6 million.
That's right, and that is really confirmation of something which was hinted at by Sinn Féin when this first emerged last week, where they referred, or their solicitors, I think, referred to this being still litigated over in some regard. Now, that in itself is unclear. Who else would be litigating here? And the will seems pretty clear that really, other than a few thousand pounds, as Maria says, for several named individuals, there is no lack of clarity here. It is all going to Sinn Féin. And as she said, there's this remarkable paragraph where it goes through what will happen if Sinn Féin splits. And of course, If you remember back to when this was made, this was 1997, the IRA were still active, the very different situation to where we are today. There were questions as to what was going to happen. Then in the years subsequent to that, once the violence stopped, once decommissioning happened, once the Good Friday Agreement came into place. And this is explicitly taking into account the possibility that there'll be a major split in the Republican movement. But whatever happens there, this is guarding that this money will only go to the party led by Gerry Adams, or in the event that he has predeceased Mr. Hampton, that it will go to the largest Republican or Nationalist party, except the SDLP. So it's pretty clear as to where this is going to go. But also, I think what is clear here is that if this litigation at the moment, whoever is involved in that, it's not clear whether Sinn Féin are a party to that, whether the Will's executors are involved in that or whatever. But if that is successful from their point of view, there is a lot more money coming to them from this will.
This is a story, Alison, and a very interesting story, because it's the biggest political donation ever in Northern Ireland. The Electoral Commission, we should make clear, have been very clear. They have said that the treasurer of a political party is the legally responsible person for ensuring that all donations it receives come from a permissible source, and they said the following: the Commission is required by law to check the permissibility of 50% of donations reported to us in Northern Ireland, but in reality we check 100%. The checks we carried out in this case were consistent with our usual procedures.
Yeah, and I think there's two things. To suggest probably that someone who was born in Britain or who carried a British passport wouldn't be a supporter of Irish unity as it was is a nonsense, because we know over the years there's been a number of several very high profile people who were British who were supporters of Irish unity. It dates back to 97. I'm assuming the 1.5 million would have been worth what those assets were worth probably at that time, and maybe the litigations over the increase in assets since that time. The fact that he appears to be quite an eccentric person who lived quite a modest life is also probably not unusual among people. But what I do think is healthy, I think, is that, you know, it's healthy to ask questions about political donations for a number of reasons. If you look at America, and if you look at what's happened there, and how American democracy has been perverted by huge political donations from huge companies who use it as a way to lobby and to have legislation change and all those sort of things, that is of great public interest. And in this case, I think the fact that it is such a large donation, clearly the public are going to be interested. As journalists, it's right that we're interested. We live in a society in a modern time where everything that we do leaves a paper trail. If you were some genius that invests in property or businesses or investments, that would all leave a paper trail, and the origins of that wealth should be quite easily traced back to where he got it from. But I have seen some comment over the years. I think the 97 date is important. I know that a lot of people on Twitter were trying to make all sorts of assertions as to where this wealth came from. That date clearly predates a lot of the time when a lot of them were claiming this money might have came from. But also, I think that we shouldn't just automatically assume that you have to be born in Ireland or be born in the Irish Republic to be a supporter of Irish unity. There are many people, and as we've heard as Brexit has developed, who would quite happily cut us off. So I think that is not interesting or healthy to be. I do think what is interesting is just that this person appears fascinating, because he just appears so reclusive and we know so little about him, and clearly that's going to spark a public interest. And I would say the more Sinn Féin try to curb that public interest, the greater it will be. So when we've seen with the sort of dark money, the DUP, the Brexit money, the fact that people weren't getting answers, it just makes people more curious, and that's right. And as journalists, we should be investigating when people are trying to steer us in a different direction. So I think the more open and transparent Sinn Féin are about this person, about who he was, about where his wealth came from, the quicker they're going to get rid of all the speculation around it.
Sam McBride, what in terms of your level of curiosity, what questions would you be asking about this £1.5 million to Sinn Féin?
Well, I think just following on from what Alison said there, I mean, I'd asked some pretty basic questions about this to Sinn Féin on Friday. I mean, we'd only learned about it the previous day. I asked them how a retired car mechanic had come to such a large sum of money, and really whether it had done anything itself to satisfy itself that this money was legitimate, that it was proper, etc. And we now know from the electoral authorities that is something which appears to be the donor's responsibility, or the responsibility of the person to whom the money is being given. And the party did not react in any sort of a way which accepted that was legitimate. They were really casting aspersions on me as a journalist, really, for asking these questions, saying this was somebody who was dead and he had come from a wealthy family, and to question the legitimacy of his wealth without any foundation, they said falls well short of the objective standard we would expect from a professional journalist. I think that anybody looking at this objectively will have raised eyebrows for all sorts of reasons. But even if we leave out the extraordinary circumstances, it would seem, of Mr. Hampton's life, the fact that there's no obvious source, it would seem, for his wealth other than Sinn Féin saying that he came from a wealthy family, but we don't have any of those people, it would seem, at this point, and there's no evidence of a wide family network to whom he is leaving the money in this will. It's a very restricted circle of people, and several of those other people are journalists or political people. But even setting that aside, this is something which is off the charts in terms of major political donations in Northern Ireland, and probably on the island of Ireland. It is something which, even if it had come from a business or from a very wealthy individual, there would be enormous interest in this, questions as to why they were doing this, where the money had it come from, if there wasn't an obvious source for that money. So I think that these questions are not going to go away. There are lots of threads here which can be pulled at. And the electoral authorities have, it would seem, at this point said they are entirely satisfied with what has happened here. But I think that some people will recall that BBC Spotlight did a very detailed programme looking at some of the money which went to the DUP during the Brexit campaign, a sum which was much smaller than this but was still enormous in its own right. And they really, in short, pulled up a lot of things which the electoral authorities had not looked at. They raised questions as to how diligent they are when it comes to actually getting to the nub of some of these questions. So I think that just because they say they're satisfied at this point, given what happened with the DUP recently, I think some people will have questions as to whether they are being thorough enough about where the funding, which after all is very, very significant to our democratic process. Any party getting a sum of this scale is in a massively advantageous position to all of its electoral rivals.
Well, look, we've asked Sinn Féin to come onto the programme to provide just a little bit more clarity to now the person who's the biggest donor ever, biggest single donation ever in Northern Ireland. And, of course, it's three times the last biggest donation, isn't it? So let's see if Sinn Féin want to share with the public their good news and just how well they knew this man. And the executor of the will, Alison Morris, well, there were two, one of them being Joe Cahill, Alison's great-uncle.
No, he's not my great-uncle, he's Maria Cahill's great-uncle.
Sorry, Maria's great-uncle. Sorry, Maria Cahill's great-uncle.
Well, you know, sometimes when I heard that, I actually thought some of it sounds quite sad and quite tragic, because this man's friends and even the people who he's left the rest of the money to, they all appear to be political connections, and there's not a great big family network. You know, there's not all the children and the grandchildren. There's not, you know, the aunts, the uncles, the brothers, the sisters, the nieces, and nephews, and that in itself. It all almost paints a picture of someone who's quite reclusive and quite isolated, and I just thought that sounded a bit sad. It's like, talk about money can't bring you happiness in some cases. But no, clearly there's going to be more questions asked. And I think that the more Sinn Féin try to put journalists off from asking questions, the more questions they're going to ask. I think that the obvious thing to do here is, you know, if this is all just the fact that someone who was, you know, a quite a reclusive and private person who decided he was going to leave all his money to Sinn Féin in 1997 because he was in favour of Irish unity and wanted his wealth spent in that way. Well, then let's just see, you know, let's just open it up and let's just see. If anything, it makes for a fascinating story. But the more that they try and resist people asking questions, the more then people are going to think that there's something being hid there.
But you say this, but I would put it to you both that surely this is a story some people might think of enormous generosity. This is one of this must be one of the most generous men in Northern Ireland, Sam McBride. Here he was. Maria Cahill tells us he was living in a caravan. And while living in a caravan, he then subsequently went on to leave millions to a political party. My goodness, what a generous story.
I think it's because of the extreme nature of the generosity and the individual or the organisation to which that generosity has been turned that this is so interesting. I mean, this is not someone who was, it would seem from his will anyway, spraying money all around him to people who lived beside him, to neighbours, to people maybe who had helped him in various ways through his life. It was all going with a tiny sum going in a separate direction, but it was all going really towards Sinn Féin. I think it also jumped out at me that not only was this someone who was living in no permanent home at this point, who had travelled all around, he lists the destinations where he's lived, several addresses in England, down in Bantry near Cork. He'd been in France for a while. So this was someone who was pretty nomadic. He was travelling around various countries. It's not entirely clear what he was doing. We're told that he may have been a mechanic or he was a driver, apparently. But then we've got a quote from someone, an unnamed source in the Sunday Independent yesterday, saying that while he's been described as a mechanic, really, he tinkered with cars. I mean, it doesn't really sound like he made much money from that. We also then see in this will at this point, not subsequent to this, but in 1997, when he's living in a mobile home, he's referring to assets in Singapore, New Zealand, other places. I mean, this is highly unusual behaviour. And I think also some people will be drawn to the fact that the two people who are executors of his will not only have very significant financial links to Sinn Féin in that they had treasurer roles with Sinn Féin at various points, Des Machen and Joe Cahill, and that really puts them in a situation where, as the executors of the will, they are also people who have very significant links to the main beneficiaries. Now, I don't know anything about wills. I'm a complete layperson here, but that I think is something that jumped out at me. And also people will be aware that those are two individuals who not only are now part of the Sinn Féin or have been part of the Sinn Féin political apparatus, they're also people who had IRA connections in the past, very senior IRA connections. So I think there are all sorts of questions which people will raise from this. And any sort of hope by Sinn Féin, I think that people will just ignore this and move on. It's just too big a sum for that to be the case.
Alex in London. Hello, Alex.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
I'm finding this extremely intriguing with regard to this money. If, in fact, this man had left it to me, the DUP, or you, for that matter, would there have been the same interest in it? And why should there be the interest? Is the implication that he stole the money, or what?
No, there's no implication of that whatsoever.
So what is it? What actually is their problem? Are they jealous, or what is it?
The story, Alex, is when you get the biggest political donation ever in Northern Ireland, then of course people are going to say, who's that? Who's the donor? When it's then a donor that very few people have heard of, is described as a car mechanic, lived in a mobile home when he wrote the will, and then goes on to donate millions of pounds to a political party, of course people are going to be interested in that story.
Really? Because he lived in a caravan? Look, I don't care if he lived in a tent. If it's his money, legally his money, he can do what he wants with it, just like you can or I can. I donate all over the place, but I certainly do not make it known who I am, because that's not the whole point of it. It's to be completely neutral. Nobody knows. You're not going to get credit or anything for it. No, it's a complete nonsense. A lot of talk about nothing. It's amazing, though, how people can't mind their own business.
Do you agree, Alison Morris?
No, that's utterly ridiculous. If he had left $2.5 million to a cat sanctuary, it would have been eccentric, and we would have all... Maybe it would have made a story in the
Excuse me, it would not if he had made it clear that he did not want to be known. Why should he be known if he doesn't want to do? It's the man's money to do what he wants with, like you. Are you jealous he didn't get it or what?
I think it's what you don't understand is the law is that political donations have now to be made public. At the time when this will would have been made, political donations wouldn't have had to be made public, but they do have to be made public and transparent, and for very good reason. Because as I said earlier, if you look at how political donations are used in places like America to buy favour, to buy legislation that helps companies, that sometimes helps companies who are doing things that are incredibly bad for the environment and all sorts of other things, then it's good that democracy is transparent and the political donations are transparent. You're talking about it as if he left the money to you or I, in which case it would be nobody's business as to where he left it. if he left it to his friends and family, it'd be nobody's business. But once somebody leaves something to a political party, of course then it becomes interesting, because that money is then used for political purposes, for lobbying purposes, and that's why it has to be open and transparent. It's nothing to do with anyone minding their own business or being jealous. I mean, what kind of journalist would we be if we hadn't have looked to see where the DUP money came that helped use the advertising, that helped sway people towards voting to leave in Brexit? Would that have been nobody's business either? Do you think we all should have minded our own business about that too? I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Right. Well, I think it's ridiculous that the extent of the publicity to this money is intriguing, to say the very least.
Well, it's also front page.
It's been established. Okay, Sinn Féin, whoever, I don't care who got it, which party got it. They've declared it, they've made it known they got it. What further? Why dissect it? What's next?
It's also front page news of the Belfast Telegraph this morning. Their headline, Sinn Féin's 1.5 million donor lived in a mobile home.
Yeah. What about it? So what? If he lived in a tent, does it matter?
Story,
what's the relevance to where he lived?
This story in the Telegraph, written by Ralph Hewitt, it starts by saying a mechanic who left Sinn Féin $1.5 million was living in a mobile home in Ireland when his will was drawn up.
Uh-huh.
William E. Hampton was of no fixed abode when he bequeathed the money, the largest ever known donation to a Northern Irish political party.
Was he not in a nursing home towards the end?
This is... Whenever he died, he was in a nursing home, but when he made the will, he was in a caravan.
Right, but he had an abode then, whether it be a caravan or whatever it is. A lot of people live in caravans. Loads of people live in them.
Do you know many millionaires who live in a caravan?
Well, I know a few who wouldn't be actually a millionaire, but they certainly don't live in a very, very luxurious life.
Do you know many millionaires who live in a caravan?
Well, I know some who would live in a house and spend some time in a caravan. Not multimillionaires, but certainly... Well, odd million or two, but they don't live a lavish life.
Do you know many millionaires who are car mechanics?
It could be a car mechanic with a fleet of garages. How do you know?
Which is why there's the interest in this story. It's just interesting.
Well, apparently he had a wealthy family. Is that what I heard?
Well, Sinn Féin have said he came from a wealthy background. Yeah, would you not like to know more detail?
No, certainly not. It's none of my business or anybody else's, really, apart from these... If a political party have got to make it known, fine, they've done that. So where do we go from there?
Alex, thank you. Morning to you. Just before we go to the news this morning, this normally would have been the lead, Sam and Alison. So John O'Dowd taking on Michelle O'Neill now. Alison?
Yeah, well, I do. This is interesting. I also do think it's healthy for democracy. I think Sinn Féin were probably stung by criticism that their leadership appointments since Gerry Adams stood down since Martin McGuinness's death were more like coronations than the leadership challenges. I do think that it's probably, if you look at the direction Sinn Féin are moving, there are probably people, and I'm assuming, and anyone I spoke to over the weekend, who are an older sort of guard of Sinn Féin who do believe now is time for change. I think that they see Michelle O'Neill as a very capable but a caretaker leader in some ways. But what I think that what we will be looking for is to challenge someone for the leadership, you have to have backers within the party. So it will be interesting to see who backs John O'Dowd. It will be then interesting to see who comes out and backs Michelle O'Neill. And it will also be interesting to see then who falls in behind them as this goes on. Because for a party like Sinn Féin, which is so tightly regimented and where decisions are usually made collectively and fed down and everybody follows them regardless, this will mean people having to take a different position on something. And that for Sinn Féin is very unusual. And that's something I think that will be interesting to watch for all of us. But I do think that some people saying that this is a leadership challenge with a hope of trying to go back to Stormont is completely off. I think, in fact, it is the opposite. I think it's a leadership challenge to put a leadership in charge of Sinn Féin who will bring the older members and some of the party members who have expressed a bit of disillusionment in recent times along into what they now call their next phase or their unity project. I don't think this has anything to do with Northern politics as such. I think this is to do with politics on an all-Ireland basis and who they think is the better strategist and who they think will take the party better forward into that.
So,
but as I said, what we will be looking to see is how senior the people are who back both of the candidates going forward and if somebody else throws their name in as well.
Who do you think Sam McBride will win for this position as vice president of the party, O'Dowd or O'Neill?
I think that really comes down to who the party machinery comes down in favour of at this point. But we really have got no indication from John O'Dowd what his platform is. We just get this confirmation that he's standing. But even by doing that, there is an implication in that he is unhappy with Michelle O'Neill, that he does not think she is the best person to lead Sinn Féin in Stormont or in Northern Ireland. It is also slightly unusual because he is not challenging the leader. That would be the normal position in a political party. If you want to affect change, if you're not happy with how things are being done, you would change the leadership. You wouldn't change the deputy leader. But of course, what is significant here is that within Sinn Féin, the deputy leader becomes the First Minister at Stormont if we have an assembly. And I do wonder if there is some sort of choreography here whereby if John O'Dowd comes in, he is someone who is, I think it's fair to say, seen as more of a pragmatist, seen as someone who has worked the system pretty well as a minister, and also someone who succeeded Katrina Ryan as education minister. That was a situation where she was seen in a very hostile way by unionists. She was not seen as terribly competent by a lot of people who were not in Sinn Féin. He was seen as somebody who came in and to a large extent fixed a lot of those issues. Is something similar happening here? There has been a very bad relationship between Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill. If we get a change in Sinn Féin, do we also get a change in the DUP? And then do we have a completely different situation in a couple of months' time?
OK. Sam McBride and Alison Morris, thank you very much indeed.